Smoke Jensen ducked his head to miss the hanging display of number 4 galvanized wash tubs, buckets, washboards, and various pieces of harness as he walked through the San Antonio Mercantile towards the counter. A wizened old man with a monk's fringe of white hair around a large expanse of bald pate glanced up through wire-rimmed glasses and peered at his customer.
What'll it be?
I could use some supplies. Slab of fat bag, couple of pounds each of beans, flour, sugar, pound of coffee beans, some taters.
Yes, sir, right away.
Oh, better throw in a can of baking powder, some dry onions, and a box of Winchester 45-7500s if you got them.
That's for that new express rifle, ain't it? I don't have any.
Then throw in a dozen sticks of dynamite. 60% will do.
I don't stock that either. You have to go to the gunsmith. He's got a powder magazine out back of his place.
Thank you. I'll take me a couple of sticks of this whorehound candy.
You got youngins?
Nah, I'm just partial to whorehound candy.
The storekeeper set about packaging Smoke Jensen's supplies. Smoke, meanwhile, rolled the sweets in a sheet of waxed paper and twisted the ends closed. He stuck his prize in his right shirt pocket under his fringed leather vest. When the small stack of purchases had been tallied, Smoke paid for them and removed a rolled-up flour sack from a hip pocket. Slowly, carefully, he put each item inside and hefted the load. Smoke stepped out onto the abbreviated boardwalk that extended porch-like around one side and along the wider front of the General Mercantile. It also fronted the next building on the main street. Blazing afternoon sun came from a right angle to blind the eyes of Smoke Jensen to all but two pair legs stuffed into an equal number of boots arranged in front of him out in the street. Smoke knew in a heartbeat that they waited for him. He sat the sack of his supplies on a bench in front of one big display window, his vision gradually clearing. Charlie Bascom reached for his gun first, but Smoke was faster. Smoke Jensen left Buck Rapone dead and Charlie Bascom crawling in the dirt. He rode out of San Antonio 10 minutes later without a backward glance. Smoke camped about 100 yards off the only road he figured Jeff and his hands would use coming to San Antonio through this sparsely settled country. Sure enough, late the next afternoon, while coffee brewed and he tended a hat-sized fire over which biscuits baked in a covered skillet, he heard 3 horses in a brisk canter. Smoke kept a careful eye to the north as the sound grew louder. He had the polished metal shaving mirror from his personal kit cupped in one hand, and when the riders came close enough to be recognized, he signaled them by a series of flashes.
You could have took that damn thing out of my eyes a little sooner.
Wanted to make sure you knew it was me. Might have been you. Arizona boys don't know that trick.
Hell, the Apaches have been using mirrors to signal us since the Spanish brought them way back. Oh, that smells good.
Step up, pour coffee. You too as well. What's the news?
We didn't see anything of Sheriff Reno or Quint Stalker, nor any of Stalker's hard cases.
Everything's set up with the widow for 2 nights from now.
Small wonder you didn't see any of Stalker's men. I had a run-in with 2 of them yesterday in San Antonio. That's why I'm out here waiting for you.
Did you stick around to explain it to the local law?
Why, Jeff, I didn't know there was any, and I didn't overstay my welcome by finding out. My guess is our friend Sheriff Reno may be in charge around here anyway.
Well, losing 2 of his posse men will sure enough make his day for him then.
What are you talking about?
Well, one thing we did find out, the sheriff is using Stalker's outlaws on the posse. There are some folk around Socorro don't take too fondly to that, including the widow Tucker.
Speaking of Tucker Ranch, we best eat hearty and sleep with a packed outfit. Tomorrow we ride there.
Smoke Jensen stared down into the black pool in his coffee cup. It struck him powerfully to realize how long it had been since he had last drank strong, dark brew from a delicate china cup like this. Of course, it had been back home on the Sugarloaf. For all her ability to rough it like a man, Sally Jensen insisted on her finery in the large log building that housed the headquarters of Smoke's Horse Breeding Ranch. Only there, he noted, the tension didn't grow so thick that it could be felt and tasted. Martha Tucker sat across from Smoke Jensen at the core of that tension.
Those cattle were stolen more than a week ago. The men who did it called their leader Smoke.
My guess, based on what the survivor of that encounter told us, is that Quint Stalker thought that one up. But it wasn't Stalker who was out there. It couldn't have been Stalker. He's not been seen around Sakaro for a good 2 weeks.
Where might he be?
We don't know. Wherever he is, he'll be up to no good. You can be sure of that.
You can also be sure of what Smoke has told you. Count on it. Like I said before, Smoke is on the right side of the law. A straight shooter.
A sudden pained expression of embarrassment twisted the Arizona Ranger's handsome features.
Sorry, the poor choice of words.
I understand.
Martha continued to recount the efforts made to force her and the children to abandon the ranch.
At first, they claimed that you had taken the money and bill of sale when you killed Larry. After that, when I insisted on seeing the transfer of title and sale bill, they stopped even mentioning that. Lately, I've been giving it some thought. Especially after talking with your hands, who were quite gentlemanly, though with a few rough edges. And Ranger York, who spoke on your behalf. I got to wondering how it could be that you were found unconscious beside my husband's body, and they didn't find the money and bill of sale on your person.
Smoke Jensen studied her calm demeanor. She was certainly a powerfully attractive woman. Her heart-shaped face revealed a firm, though not stern, mouth, wide-set clear blue eyes, and a high brow. Her hands, worn by years at the washboard and cook stove, still retained a semblance of youthful elegance. Carried herself well, too, he noticed. Even the hostility she had directed toward him at the outset had been muted by an inner disposition toward true justice rather than revenge. Her children, quiet and polite, showed good upbringing. They'd been clean and wore neat clothing. They'd gone off to their loft bed shortly after Smoke and Jeff arrived. Most of all, as he had just discovered, her mind worked rather well. No one else had come up with that particular question, let alone an explanation.
I asked the sheriff that very question when he came into my cell to, arrange a confession. He didn't have an answer.
Neither do I. That's what perplexes me.
Much as she disliked the direction of her own thoughts, Martha Tucker had to admit that this trim-waisted, broad-shouldered man was far more handsome than either of his ranch hands. She chastised herself for the strong, though unwanted, attraction she felt toward this rugged mountain man gunfighter.
How do you mean, Miss Tucker?
Why, simply that there have been rumors about our Sheriff Reno. It's said that he's lazy, which I can vouch for. Also, that to make work easy, he sent more than one innocent man to the gallows.
That's not true, ma'am. The law don't have anything to do with convictions and sentencing. That's up to the judge and jury.
Don't their decisions rely a great deal on a lawman's evidence and testimony?
You got me there, ma'am.
What I was getting at is that Sheriff Reno is supposed to have created evidence out of whole cloth several times before. Also withheld evidence or suppressed testimony that would have favored the accused person.
Fits with the way he handled this case. Last thing I remember, I was wearing my own guns. Then they showed up in Reno's desk drawer, and I was supposed to be packing some hand-me-down, cast-off conversion Remington. And if I had the money I was supposed to have taken, he would have bragged that up to me, too.
For my part, I think that there never was any money, because I know that Larry had no intention of ever selling this ranch.
So then, you believe me?
Yes, at least enough to ask you, what do you intend to do about it?
I intend to find the one who did it, and why. That'll clear my name.
Then the next question has to be, what can I do to help?
Smoke and Jeff exchanged smiles.
Well, Miss Tucker, I need a place to operate out of. Somewhere the sheriff and Quint Stalker's men would never believe me to be.
Well, I can let you and your two hands and Ranger York move on to the ranch. They've tried so hard to make me believe you were guilty, no one would ever suspect you to be here.
We'll be settled in by morning. Then I'll come let you know where we're set up.
Why, the bunkhouse, of course. I read somewhere that if one wanted to hide something important, the best place would be in plain sight.
Poe, I think. The purloined letter.
I am impressed, Mr. Jensen. I never expected.
A gunfighter to be well-read, I had a good teacher.
Who was that, Mr. Jensen?
A man called Preacher. He raised me up from about the age of your oldest. Taught me things that would astound a body. Some of them I never believed until I'd gotten around a bit. Walt and Ty are close at hand. We should be moved into the bunkhouse before midnight.
Fine.
Martha rose and extended a hand in courteous fashion.
I'll see you for breakfast at first light. We can start laying plans on how to expose the truth.
Jeffrey Benton Howe set aside the sheet of thick, creamy, off-white linen stationery. He could not restrain the smile of triumph that lighted his face, all except his malevolent, deep-set blue eyes. He rose to his highly polished boots from behind the cherry wood secretary desk and crossed the room to the tall, drape-framed window that overlooked the main street of Saqqaro. Backlighted by the searing sun, he struck a familiar pose, proud of his lean, hard body for all its 51 years.
They will be here as expected. Train to Albuquerque, then on by carriage. I suggest we send one of ours. It will make a good impression. These politicians of yours seem to dote on such privileges.
Oh, they are not my politicians, my friend. I am a citizen of Mexico.
New Mexico, to be precise. The country of your adopted nationality lost this territory to the United States in the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. That was long before you were born.
No, amigo. I was born in this part of Mexico in 1845. And to me and my family, the distinction of which country has claim to it on paper is not in dispute. It is a part of Mexico. It always will be. The day will come when we cast off the foreign occupation of our lands.
Quint Stalker stared at Miguel Sierrez in utter disbelief. He figured the one good thing about this ridiculous conversation was that so far no one had asked him why they had come running back to Saqqaro with their tails between their legs.
Now tell me, Stalker, what brings you so hastily back to Saqqaro?
A pained expression crossed Stalker's face.
Truth to tell, Mr. Benton Howell, the Apaches runned us clear the hell and gone out of them mountains.
A few scruffy savages with bows and arrows? Surely you had enough firepower?
Not for more than a dozen of them. Those Apaches is tough fighters.
Perhaps your men have lost their cojones.
You see, Mr. Pentonhall, their raiding parties are no more than 5-6 men, but they can tie up a platoon-sized army patrol for weeks at a time. All the while, they're killing, burning, and running off stock. Those stinking Injuns killed one of my boys, stuck arrows in 3 more. We's lucky to get out with our hair.
Yes, I can appreciate that. And the fact remains that we must keep control of those claims. I want you to gather in all of your men and head back to the White Mountains. This time, make certain you can hold off every red savage there, man or boy.
Thing is, we take in too many men, and it attracts the attention of the soldier boys and the Arizona Rangers. Can't fight all of that at once. Besides, I need to leave a few men here. Keep a lid on things.
Very well. Those who are out with Sheriff Reno on the posse can remain here to handle local matters. Take the rest and leave by noon tomorrow.
Yes, sir, if that's what you want. Does that mean you're giving up the hunt for Smoke Jensen?
Oh, no, my dear boy. Not at all. We have some other plans for your Mr. Smoke Jensen. Plans I'm sure he will find most unpleasant.
Jeff and Walt reached Saqqaro as the swampers were dumping their mop buckets and tossing out the dirty sawdust from the previous day. Jeff, who sported a clean-shaven face and a fresh haircut, opted for the livery. Walt ambled his mount down the street to the barber shop. He entered and settled himself in a chair.
Trim and a shave. Or trim the mustache, too.
Right away, sir.
Hear there's been some excitement in town since I left.
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. Were you here when Mr. Lawrence Tucker was murdered?
Yep. Rode out the next day.
My stars and garters. Then you don't know about the jailbreak.
What jailbreak?
3 desperados broke that Smoke Jensen out of the jail.
Walt noted that the barber, Floyd was the name on the fancy diploma above the sideboard bevel-edged mirror, happened to omit to mention the lynch mob and his colorful rendition of Smoke's escape.
That sounds like quite a tale, right enough. Are you sure those desperados weren't part of the Stalker gang?
Oh, sure, I'm sure. Oh, my, yes. Mr. Stalker lent his foreman and some of his hands to the posse the sheriff took out. He's got more out with him now.
Then this Jensen is still on the loose?
Oh, from what we've heard, indeed he is.
Two men entered and peered curiously at Walt. Under normal circumstances, this constituted a serious insult to any man on the frontier. Well accustomed by his years on the dodge, Walt Reardon showed not a flicker of annoyance at the scrutiny. As it continued, though, another idea occurred to him. He nodded at the nearest one.
You looking for somebody you know, mister?
No. Just thought I'd seen you around.
Maybe you have. But what business is it of yours?
Gentlemen, please. I'm about to perform a delicate tonsorial procedure. I'm sure these fellows meant no disrespect, sir.
Tain't heard from the other one yet.
A long 5 seconds ticked by. The smaller of the pair cut his eyes away from Walt Reardon's riveted stare.
No offense, mister. We was looking for a friend.
Well, that's right. We expected him to be here ahead of us.
No offense taken, then. Tell you what, I'll buy you a drink when we get through.
That's mighty wide of you, Mr.
Walt. Kruger.
I'm Sam Ferguson. This is Gus Earhart. We'll just take you up on that drink, Walt. Say it, the hang dog.
I know where it is. I'll be waiting for you there.
Three riders, looking like ranch hands, rode into the livery stable shortly after Jeff York arrived there. Jeff knew they weren't wranglers when they turned their mounts into nearby stalls and bade the old codger who ran the place to take care of them, then walked down the alternating stretch of boardwalk and hard-pounding pathway into the center of town. A lifetime of observation had told Jeff that real cowboys would never walk anywhere. They would straddle their horses to go from one saloon to another, even if they were two doors apart. Jeff stood in the shade of the big livery barn and watched him ankle down the street. He marked the saloon they entered, then turned back to the livery man.
They come in often?
Yeah, red as rain.
The man added a wink, a nod, and a sharp elbow in Jeff's ribs.
Some of Quint Stalker's crew. Real hard cases. It looks like it don't bother you none.
Oh, they do. It's just, I don't show it all that much.
There's some things a fella could say about them, sure enough. The breed, if not them in particular.
Oh?
Them three do their best work on women and kids, where I hear it. Right tough hombres when it comes to scaring the bejesus out of some 10-year-old.
Sounds like you don't hold them in great esteem.
No, sir. They're low-life trash, and that's for sure.
Jeff gathered a few more tidbits and then made his way to the saloon the men had entered. The Blue Lantern turned out to be a dive, hardly more than a road ranch. Jeff evaluated it as he pushed through the hanging glass bead curtain that screened the interior from passerby. He barely turned left toward the bar when one of the trio spun around, his fingers closed on the butt of a big Colt in a left-hand holster.
You following us, mister?
Apparently, with odds of 3-1, they had no qualms about bracing a full-grown man.
No, not at all. I only got in town a bit ahead of you.
Waited all this time to come in here, huh? I say you're snooping around where you don't belong. You smell of law dog to me. You want to prove otherwise? You'll have to do it with an iron in your hand.
Jeff's Colt appeared in his hand in a blur. Jaws sagged on the three gunnies. They hadn't even made a move. The one with his hand on the grip of his six-gun released his hold instantly, his arm rising up and away from his body.
Did any of you ever see a law dog haul iron that fast?
All three shook their heads in a negative gesture. Then the mouthy one recovered enough aplomb to get in a word or two.
Well, there is El Feglabaca.
Nah, he don't count. He's over Texas way right now. Besides, Biker's about half outlaw anyway.
Right, and Sheriff Reno runned him out of town after that dust-up with McCarty and his crew down in Frisco.
So, what'll it be, fellas?
Oh, hell, he was just a little proudy. We've been out chasing some jackass who killed a rancher hereabout.
Jeff recalled that Stalker's men were serving with the posse. If he could completely defuse this situation, he just might learn something useful.
All right by me. I'm just going to ease this hammer back down, and then I'll join you for a drink.
Sure enough, mister. Say, you got a name?
It's Jeff. Jeff Kruger.
Pleased to meet you.
The man made the introductions of his companions, and the palpable tension in the room bled off. Meanwhile, Walt Reardon sat in the Hangdog Saloon now, where the two rough-edged wranglers from the barbershop had agreed to join him. While he waited, a conversation at the bar drew his interest.
Say, I sure wouldn't mind working for the B-Bar H right about now.
Why's that?
Well, ain't you heard, Yancey? That English fellow that owns the place is fixing to throw a real fiesta. Gonna be the get-together of the season from what some of his hands have been saying.
What's the occasion? He getting hitched?
Maybe he found a place to sell beeves for more than $20 a head.
Way I got it, this here Benton Howe is doing it to honor some big-shot politicians from Washington.
Walt took another swig of beer and kept listening.
Gonna be in 3 days. Even the hands is invited. At least after the high mucky mucks get their fill of vittles. They're roasting a whole steer. There'll be liquor and music and dancing. Those are lucky boys to be working for that English dude.
So what's these politicians done to be honored for, Weasel?
Don't mean they done anything. Yet. And the way it is, politicians are always looking for a little something extra, if you get my drift. So it don't harm nothing to have them in your pocket before you want a favor done.
Walt's new, slightly nervous friends banged through the door at that point, and the interest in revelations came to an end. Smoke Jensen spent the day in a fruitless search for any sign that could lead him to the men who had been pestering the Tucker family. From the confession he had gotten out of the wounded rustler, he knew that Quint Stalker and his gang were involved in that job. Could he be responsible for all the other harassment as well? More than likely, Smoke considered, as he headed his big roan back to the ranch headquarters. Ty Hardy cut his trail some 10 minutes later.
What'd you find?
From the look on your face, the same as you.
A whole lot of nothing.
Too much time has gone by. We can't sift any strange tracks from those of the hands. I've been hearing about a lot of little incidents around the valley from Miss Tucker. One of them is a trading post owner who got himself killed back a couple of weeks. From what I figure, it happened the same day I got away from the lynch mob. I know this might be just chasing another whirlwind, but I'd like you to ride over that way, find out what you can.
Well, I can do that, Smoke. What was the man's name, and where do I find this trading post?
Ezekiel Dillon. He ran his outpost at the far side of the valley, north and east of Saqqara.
Well, I'll set off first thing in the morning.
After a sumptuous spread of savory food back at the Tucker Ranch, Smoke Jensen took his last cup of coffee out onto the porch and lit up a cigar. Pale blue-white spirals rose from the glowing tip. The rich tobacco perfumed the air. Martha Tucker joined him a short while later.
My father smoked cigars. I always liked the aroma. I suppose that's one reason I married a cigar smoker. Have you been married long, Mr. Jensen?
Many years. How'd you reckon I was a married man?
The way you are with the children. Affectionate, but not overbearing. Also, I might add, the restraint you show in my presence.
Yeah. Sally's been my treasure for most of my grown life. We have a daughter of marrying age and 3 younger.
You must miss them.
I do. This is a far piece from the High Lonesome.
I understand. Your hand said your ranch was in the heart of the Rockies. It must be beautiful. So much variety compared to the desert sameness everywhere one looks around here.
You're right about that.
You're not very talkative, Mr. Jensen. Don't take that as a criticism. What I mean is, you may not say a lot, but your words are filled with meaning. It takes a wise man to conduct himself like that.
I'm flattered.
Smoke came to his boots.
I'll be heading to the bunkhouse now. Ty's heading out early in the morning, and I want a few words with him before he turns in.
Good night, Mr. Jensen.
By nightfall, liquor had loosened plenty of tongues in the saloons of Sicaro. Jeff York and Walt Reardon had both obtained several independent confirmations of the big fiesta to be held at the B Bar H. When they met in the Caritas La Jolla for a meal of carne con chili verde, they quickly discovered this.
I'd say Smoke would be mighty interested.
What I think he'd be most likely to want to know is what's behind the festivities. I'm going to try to wrangle you and me an invitation.
Do you think you can do it?
Should be easy. A rich Arizona cattleman interested in buying the seed bull I saw advertised at the feed mill. Inquiries to be addressed to a Mr. Jeffrey Benton Howell of the B Bar H.
Damn, I missed that one entire.
You've got to have a lawman's eye for the small details, Walt. We'd best head for the Tucker place and fill in Smoke. Then I'll outfit myself in expensive clothes, do up a flash roll of currency, and head for the office of Benton Howell.
Late the next afternoon, Jeffrey Benton Howe effusively welcomed Stephen J. York of Flagstaff, Arizona, into his office. He ushered his visitor to a plush chair beside the huge cherry wood desk and crossed to a sideboard where he poured brandy for two.
This is the first personal inquiry I've received from such a distance. May I ask what excited you sufficiently about Herefordshire Grand Expositor to pay me this visit?
Jeff York leaned back in the chair with a comfortable slouch, conveying his ease to an attentive Jeffrey Benton Howe.
Well, I know it's a common practice, and I don't want you to take offense, but I've learned that in horse trading and cattle buying, it's best not to purchase sight unseen.
A wise man indeed. Of course, before any transaction was completed, I would urge the buyer to make a personal inspection of Expositor. He's a fine Hereford bull, and I'm justifiably proud of him.
He studied his visitor while the Arizona cattleman framed a response. Jeffrey saw a well-dressed man turned out in dustless boots. A hand-tooled, concho-decorated cartridge belt of Mexican origin, no doubt, fitted snugly around a lean waist. A shaft of magenta sunlight put a soft glow to well-cared-for gunmetal in the leather pocket. The suit had a flavor of Mexico in its cut, sort of the Hacienda style favored by Miguel Sierrez. The flat-crowned Cordovan sombrero clinched it for Benton Howe. He bought this man as genuine.
I've heard good things about crossing these new short-horn, polled Herefords with range cattle. Improves the stock remarkably.
More meat, more pounds, with less size. They're all the rage back east.
Not many willing to take the risk out here, I'll bet.
Well, not so far. Tunstall tried it, and some say that's what got him in the Lincoln County War. Some people are slow to accept any change. Take barbed wire.
Jeff made an expected nasty face at the mention of the often lethal barriers.
We had a fellow around here who loudly advocated the use of barbed wire. Said all the small Mexican farmers around Socorro needed it to keep range cattle out of their fields. There's some say that's why a gunfighter named Smoke Jensen was hired to get rid of him.
Smoke Jensen? I've heard of him. Did this happen recently?
Only a couple of weeks ago. Rancher's name was Lawrence Tucker. He was thrown out of the Cattlemen's Association because of his stand on barbed wire. Might be someone took the whole matter a bit more personally than others. For my own part, I say live and let live. God knows there's plenty of rocks around here. If the Mexicans want to protect their fields, let them busy themselves building stone walls. They've worked well enough in jolly old England, I dare say.
Quite. Now, when can I examine Expositor?
How long do you intend to stay in Socorro?
2 or 3 days. As long as it took to see this championship animal of yours.
Benton Howe thought for a long moment.
I'm having a rather gala soiree at the ranch 2 days hence. I would be honored if you would attend. You can see Expositor, and I can introduce you to some gentleman who might be of some benefit to you over in Arizona.
Sounds wonderful to me.
You're staying at the hotel?
I am.
I'll have one of my hands meet you there tomorrow. Escort you to the ranch.
Much obliged, Mr. Benton Howell. It's sure nice doing business with a gentleman like yourself.
Jeff finished off the brandy and rose to his boots.
Oh, I have my foreman along with me. He's a better judge of prime cattle than I am. Would you mind if I bring him along?
Oh, not at all. He'll be most welcome. Until tomorrow, then, Mr. York.
Hasta la vista.
Smoke Jensen had made his own plans for the day of Benton Howe's big fiesta. He wanted to be there to inspect the layout firsthand. To do so, he would scout the place. And that night seemed ideally suited to his needs. He asked Martha Tucker for directions and rode out. As midnight beckoned with Stygian darkness, Smoke Jensen crested a pinion-studded ridge and started down the back slope. Only the scant, frosty light of stars illuminated his surroundings. If Benton Howe did have night riders posted, Smoke had a better chance of eluding them this night. What he had in mind could all go up in a flash if some nighthawk stumbled onto him prematurely. Smoke descended the eastern grade that formed the bowl valley which housed the B-Bar H. The thicket of trees grew denser the further he drifted toward the distant ranch house. He wanted to check out sites within long rifle range of the area where the fiesta would be held, in the event he needed to make use of them. A sudden flare of yellow light alerted Smoke that Benton Howe had put out sentries. Now he'd have to find out how many there might be and where. Smoke combined his missions. He worked his way with great caution around the crescent face of the ridge through the long hours of the early morning. Thin line of gray brightened the eastern horizon when he finished scouting the ranch. Another hour on foot took him away from the area and back to his horse. He headed back toward the Tucker spread.
Well, it'll take some doing. I think I'll definitely be able to spoil Benton Howe's little party.
Zeke Dillon come to these mountains a long time ago.
The wrinkle-faced Tuwa grandfather talked to Ty Hardy, both men seated outside his summer brush lodge.
I hear he was killed recently.
The old man looked off a moment.
It's supposed to look like a thief took things. This one's eyes saw the men who came.
And do you know them?
Oh, yes. Very bad men. The big one, their chief, this one has seen him before. He's called Stalker.
You're sure of this? Did you tell the law about it?
Why bother? This Stalker and the Jefe Reno are like two beans in a pod.
Well, thank you, Here's Wynn. I will hold your words close to me.
You will tell the Jefe Reno?
No. I work for another man, Smoke Jensen.
Ah, his name is known to our people. That one walks tall with honor. You are fortunate to be one of his warriors. Go with the sun at your back.
Ty Hardy left with the certain knowledge that he had learned something important, and also that he had been honored simply for being one of Smoke Jensen's hands. Powerful medicine, as the Indians say. Still done up as a wealthy rancher, Jeff York, along with Walt Reardon, arrived at the B-Bar H at mid-afternoon the next day.
Glad you came. I'll introduce you to some of the other guests who journeyed out early. Then I'll show you Expositor.
Wonderful.
On a wide flagstone veranda, several portly men, dressed in the typical garb of Washington politicians, lounged in large wicker chairs. All had drinks in their hands, and it was obvious to Jeff York that these were not their first drinks of the day. Benton Howe ushered Jeff and Walt from one to the next, making acquaintances. Uniformly, their handshakes were weak, soft, and insincere. The Arizona Ranger guessed that not a one of them had done a day's work in his damn life. A white-jacketed servant shoved a cut crystal glass of bourbon into Jeff's hand. After their first drinks had been drained, Walt acknowledged a signal from Jeff and excused himself. He wanted a good look around the ranch. Most of the next half hour's conversation centered around competing accounts of the importance of each man to the smooth functioning of the federal government. Jeff endured it with less than complete patience. He felt genuine relief and expectation when Benton Howell announced that he intended to show off his prize stud bull now.
What do you think of them?
They are not long for sparkling conversation.
Boars, the lot of them. And boobies, too. Although quite necessary if one is to operate unhindered in your territory or mine. Well then, here we are.
Benton Howell directed Jeff into a small barn that contained a single stall. Expositor had a slat-level back, his face, neck, and chest a creamy white mass of tight, curly hair. The rest of him, except for the tip of his tail, was a dark red-brown with similar woolly appearance. The bull had one slab side turned toward him, and he regarded him over a front shoulder with a big brown eye. Although a lawman rather than a stockman, Jeff considered him to be a magnificent animal, and he said so.
I thought you'd be impressed. He's barely 4 years old, and he's already topped over 300 heifers and cows.
Wonder he isn't worn down to a nubbin.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with his equipment. Far from it. If I had a cow in season, I'd show you.
They talked of the animal's performances for a while. Then Jeff moved in close to look at the conformation of the huge beast.
He's certainly blocky.
That's how you get the weight-to-size ratio to work out. The bloodline came originally from Herefordshire. They've revolutionized livestock raising back east. Even a man with a small farm can pasture 30 or 40 head. Not like out here, where one needs 1,000 acres for 50 head.
For a moment, Jeff began to doubt Benton Howe's involvement in the murder of Lawrence Tucker, or anything else not above board. The man's expert knowledge of animal husbandry, and his obvious rapt interest in it, argued that it must be his main concern. Yet why the obvious allusions to bribing or otherwise obtaining a favorable connection with the slippery striped trouser crowd? Jeff would have to wait and see if something important came out at the fiesta the next day.
What time does this shindig start tomorrow?
When the heat breaks over, about 4 o'clock, I would imagine. Are you ready to buy Expositor right now?
He is a handsome creature, I'll allow. A lot bigger than I'd expected from the breed. I'd like to think on it a while.
Sleep on it if you want. Enjoy what the ranch has for diversions tomorrow, and then give me your answer at the fiesta.
A festive atmosphere prevailed over the ranch headquarters the next morning from early on. Two huge stone-lined pits had been stoked with wood long before dawn. With the contents reduced to glowing coals, half a steer turned slowly over each of them. Whole goats revolved on smaller spits on fires of their own. Ranch hands worked clumsily at unfamiliar tasks, erecting striped canvas awnings to provide shade and a pretense of coolness, setting up tables under them and laying out tableware and napkins. More guests began arriving shortly after an early breakfast. Jeff York took careful note of the occupants of each buggy and consigned to memory the name and position of each visitor. Jeffrey Benton Howe moved through the crowd, introducing guests.
Mr. York, this is Senator Claypool. He's on the Committee for Indian Affairs. Senator, may I introduce Stephen York from Arizona?
Claypool had a politician's glad hand or shake, pale blue eyes dancing with merriment.
Pleasure, sir. Are you a cattle breeder, too?
No, I raise cattle for market.
I see. Sparse vegetation over Arizona way, I'm told. How many 100 head can you feed?
Not hundreds. Thousands. I run 5,000 head this time of year, and I hold most of the mountain pasture from Flagstaff to Globe in the Tonto Range.
Stand corrected. How do you manage such a vast area? Aren't the Indians a constant threat?
Not really. If all the Indians killed in the dime novels had been for real, there wouldn't be an Apache left alive. I found that the Eastern journalists tend to embellish the truth.
The heavy drinking began around 10:30. Jeff held onto a single tumbler of whiskey and took sparing sips from it. He began to wonder what Smoke Jensen had in mind for this gala party. Knowing the gunfighter as he did, Jeff could not see Smoke passing up such an opportunity, that was for sure. Noontime came, and still no sign of the fine hand of Smoke Jensen. Many of the ranch hands drifted in during the next hour, They all had the look of second-rate gun hawks to Jeff. The rich aromas of cooking meat and pots of beans, field corn, and other delights filled the air. Jeff had emptied his glass and had turned back to the beverage table when he found himself face to face with a man he knew only too well, the desperado Concho Jim Packard.
What the hell you doing here, Ranger?
Excuse me? You've got me mixed up with someone else.
Not a chance. No goddamn Arizona Ranger killed three of my best friends and I don't remember.
Packard turned quickly to search the crowd for his employer.
Hey, boss! You done brought a rattlesnake into your nest!
Jeffrey Benton Howe came over in a flash.
What the devil are you bellowing about?
This one.
Concho Jim pointed at Jeff.
Why, Mr. York's my guest. He's come to buy Expositor.
Like hell. His name's York right enough, but it's Jeff York, Arizona Ranger.
Strong hands closed on Jeff York's arms before he could react or try to make a break. A large hand covered his mouth. Benton Howe gave him a disbelieving look, then cut his eyes to Concho Jim.
You're sure of this?
Damn right I am. He got me locked up in the territorial prison for 6 years. Killed three of my partners, too.
Unseen, but witnessing it all, Walt Reardon made a quick evaluation of the situation. Two guns against all those present made for lousy odds. Better that he get away from here and find Smoke Jensen. He edged his way out of the crowd and made for the livery barn and his horse. Frowning, Benton Howe addressed the gun hands holding Jeff.
Let's not make a spectacle of this. Take him away quietly. Lock him in the tool shed. We'll deal with our spy later. After our distinguished guests have eaten and drunk enough to forget about it.
Careful to create the least disturbance possible, the hard cases lifted Jeff York clear of the ground and then carried him to a shed out of the direct sight of the party and politicians. There, they disarmed him and threw him inside. Walt Reardon rode wildly through the wooded area where he hoped Smoke could be found. Suddenly, he saw a light glinting off a mirror, shining into his eyes. He knew the signal. Smoke emerged from a thicket.
Walt, what happened?
They got Jeff. Someone recognized him.
What do you mean they got him?
They've locked him in a little shed out of the way of the party.
With the right distraction, do you think we could get in there and get Jeff out?
Walt grinned. He had a fair idea what Smoke Jensen considered the right distraction.
Damn right.
Then let's ride.
After Walt had ambled his mount down a covered route back to the party, he found he had not been missed. No one, in fact, paid him the least attention. He took up a position away from the crowd, close to the tool shed, and waited for Smoke to join the dance. By 3 o'clock that afternoon, most of the guests of Jeffrey Benton Howe had forgotten the small disturbance in the side yard of the ranch house. Great mounds of barbecued beef and goat filled the serving tables, where a splendid buffet had been laid out. The folks lined up to pile Benton Howe's largest on their plates. White-aproned cooks toiled over the pots of beans, bowls of salsa, skillets of rice, platters of corn boiled in its shucks, and, of course, the savory meat as they ladled and served the festive crowd. Beer, whiskey, and brandy had flowed freely since mid-morning, kept everybody in a jolly mood. Yep, his fiesta was going exceedingly well, Jeffrey Benton Howe thought to himself. And it continued to go well until a whole watermelon, taken from among half a dozen of its twins in a tub of icy deep well water, suddenly exploded with a wild crack and showered everyone in the vicinity with sticky red pulp. A line of liquor-filled decanters exploded next in a shower of crystal shards that cut and stung the now terrified guests. Then a large terracotta bowl of beans went up, peppering more of the politicians with scalding frijoles. Smoke raced to his next position, atop a ridge where he had a clear field of fire over the whole ranch yard. He used it to good advantage, firing 4 more rounds into the crowd. Smoke reloaded the express rifle on the move to another choice location. Two of Benton Howe's hard cases had more of their wits about them than the others. They grabbed up rifles and began firing back. Their spent rounds kicked up turf a good 200 yards short of Smoke's last position. Smoke knelt and shouldered the .45-7500 Express and squeezed off another shot. He saw it plow into the chest of one rifleman. The man's Winchester went flying as he catapulted backward and flopped and twitched on the ground. His cohort made a hasty retreat. Smoke decided to go to work on the nearest buffet table. Walt Reardon considered the confusion to be at maximum now. Lips set in a thin, grim line, he made his move, approaching the shed from the rear. Rounding one side, Walt placed himself between a guard posted by Benton Howe. With a swift, sure move, Walt drew his six gun and screwed the muzzle into the sentry's right ear.
I'll have the key to that lock if you don't mind.
What the heck?
Do it now, or I'll move all your brains to one side of your head.
Huh?
The outside.
Walt gave his Colt a nudge.
All right!
The thoroughly cowed hard case fished a brass key from his vest pocket. Walt Reardon snatched the key with his left hand.
Thanks, buddy.
Then clubbed that sentry senseless with the barrel of the peacemaker. Walt bent to the lock on the door of the shed. Meanwhile, Smoke had shifted his aim to the house. Striped pants politicians scattered in utter panic. Some fled to the carriages that had brought him and drove off in reckless abandon. Others dived into corral, where fresh, still warm cow pies awaited them. While he kept up his long-range destruction, Smoke kept an eye on the unpainted shed. When he saw Walt open the door and Jeff come stumbling out into the light, Smoke shifted his aim once more, this time to two men walking rapidly toward Walt, each with a hand on a gun. Shirt fabric, blood, and tissue flew from the front of the gunhawk's chest in crimson clouds. Walt had his gun out, and Jeff stooped to retrieve both of the dead men's weapons. They made their way to the mounts. From his final position, where he had left his roan stallion tied off to a ground anchor, Smoke Jensen gave covering fire while Walt Reardon and Jeff York burned ground out of the BRH compound.
God damn you, Smith Jensen!
Livid with outrage, Benton Howe stomped around the flagstone veranda of his house, looking bleakly at the broken windows, shredded curtains, bullet holes in the interior walls. He bawled his fist in impotent wrath.
I know it was him. It was Smoke Jensen. Somehow he's found out!
Most of those present had no idea what the hell he was talking about. Miguel Sierrez, who had taken a slight nick in the left shoulder, knew only too well. He hastened to the side of his co-conspirator.
Softly, amigo, softly. It would not do to bring up such unpleasant matters in the presence of our guests. You have suffered enough loss today.
How do you mean?
When the shooting stopped, all but two of your working hands rolled their blankets and departed. They don't like being shot at.
Damn them! Cowards, the lot! They were only fit for nursing cows.
See, but one does not run a ranch without someone to nurse the cows, no? I can lend you some men until you can hire more, or clear up this difficulty with Smoke Jensen.
Thank you, my friend. Now, I want the other hands to assemble outside the bunkhouse. Tell those hired guns of Quint Stalkers to hunt down Smoke Jensen and kill him, or don't come back for their pay.
Much to his discomfort, Forrest Gore had to deliver orders to the hard cases hired on to do Benton Howe's dirty work. With Quint Stalker absent, leadership devolved on Payne Finney, who had sent him out to take over the boys in the field. Finney was making slow progress in his recovery from the pellet wounds given him by Smoke Jensen. If he could speak honestly, Finney would prefer to have nothing further to do with Smoke Jensen. Fact was, he feared that being still weak from his wounds, the men would not do what he told them. After a meeting with Benton Howe, Payne Finney rode out of the BRH on the seat of a buckboard. His face burned with the humiliation of being reduced to such a means of transportation and for being talked down to like some lackey on the mighty Lord Tennant's farm. His saddle rested in the back, along with supplies he carried for the men searching for Smoke Jensen. His favorite horse trailed behind, reins tied to the tailgate. With effort, he banished his resentment.
If I have my way, Jensen will be run to ground in no more than 2 days. After all, the man's flesh and blood, not a damn ghost. He has to eat and sleep and shit like any other man. With you along, I'll damn sure get him.
Payne spoke to the big, dark brindle bloodhound that sat beside him, tongue lolling.
All we have to do is find a single place Smoke Jensen has made camp and put you on his trail.
Finney's right hand caressed the grip of his .44 Smith & Wesson American.
Smoke Jensen, your ass is mine!
Forrest Gore had his own ideas about finding Smoke Jensen.
It's goddamn impossible!
Gore spoke to five men gathered around a small pond in the Cibola Range.
Jensen camped here last night, we all know that. Then he rode out to the west early this morning.
Actually, Gore was wrong about all that. Ty Hardy had spent the night there and ridden back to the Tucker Ranch shortly before first light. Smoke Jensen was way closer than he thought.
Ah, shit!
With startling effect, a bullet cracked over their heads and sent down a shower of leaves. Forrest Gore jumped upright and hugged the bole of a tree, putting its bulk between him and the direction from which the slug came. Vern Draper was right beside him.
All right, keep a sharp eye. When he fires again, we can spot where he is, split up, and close in on him.
By the time we get there, he'll be gone and firing at us from some other place.
Gore gave Vern's words careful consideration. They had been hunting Smoke Jensen for the better part of 2 weeks now, with always the same damn results. The bastard was never seen, and they got shot at. With a troubled frown, Gore worked his idea over out loud.
Well, what if that's not Jensen at all? What if it's one of those hands of his who broke up the lynch mob? It ain't possible that he was down in San Antonio and leading you fellas around by the nose up here in the Cibolas at the same time.
I don't think it was even him down there.
But who else could send Charlie Bascom running with his tail twixt his legs? I say we're looking in the wrong place. I say we leave whoever it is up here to itself and head south.
Yeah? Well, you better clear that with Quint.
Quint's busy somewhere else. Payne sent me out here to help you find Smoke Jensen. I think he's clean out of the area. So we go where he is. God damn it!
Crap!
Another round from the express rifle of Smoke Jensen convinced the others to follow the rather indistinct orders of Forrest Gore. Later that same day, Smoke Jensen met with Jeff York and the hands from the Sugarloaf. They sat around the table in the bunkhouse at the Tucker Ranch, cleaning their weapons and drinking coffee. Smoke announced that it looked like the searchers were being pulled out of the mountains. They all agreed that an evening visit to the B-Bar-H was in order. That night, shortly after midnight, they made their move on the ranch. Jeffrey Benton Howe had learned one thing from the attack on his headquarters. He had set more night guards in place. But with Jeff tying Walt with Smoke, they made quick work of silencing him. Moving from one preordained spot to the next, the four men sniped the ranch. Early on, Smoke had targeted an oil lamp inside the house, which exploded into fragments and set the room ablaze. Eventually, the fire spread, and had it not been for a horse-drawn two-wheel hand pumper connected to a canvas hose running to the creek bank, the whole place might have burned down. The next day, Benton Howe was forced to send for reinforcements. 9 men had quit that morning. Smoke Jensen had nearly succeeded in burning down his house. His study was a ruin. All meals were being prepared in the bunkhouse because the kitchen had burned out completely. Now, he confronted one of the men he considered responsible for his current calamity. Sheriff Jake Reno stood across the cherry wood desk in Benton Howe's office above the bank. With him was the mayor of Saguaro. Both wore sheepish expressions as Benton Howe tore him new assholes. Only now had he begun to wind down.
I didn't spend the money to get you two elected to hear a constant stream of reports of failure. I expected competence. I expected success. Now I'm going to get it. I want your full cooperation. No complaints, no excuses, no lectures on why it can't be done. I'm putting out the word for every available gun hand in the Southwest to come here to put an end to Smoke Jensen.
I thought you wanted it all done legally.
I wanted results!
Mayor Ruggles looked absolutely stricken.
You'll fill the streets of Sakara with saddle trams and every two-bit gun slick around. Think of the good people of the community.
I am thinking of the good people. Miguel Sayeres and myself.
Why don't you simply offer a larger reward?
Too damn tight-fisted to raise the ante on Smoke Jensen's head, Jeffrey Benton Howe glared at Reno for a minute.
Without gunmen to collect it, that would only tie up more of my money. What's going to happen is that the city is going to add $1,000 to the reward.
What?
If you think it's such a good idea to put out more funds for the purpose, then surely it behooves you to do it. Sort of putting your money where your mouth is, eh, old boys?
Well, if that's what you want, we'll see about it right away. Only let me appeal to you to keep the gun trash out of town.
It's your posterior they'll be saving, as well as mine. You and Sheriff Eagle Eye here. Now get out of here and run your errands like good little lads. I want 100 guns in here, and Smoke Jensen stretched over his saddle shortly thereafter.
Sicaro became a busy place as the word went out for fast guns. Mayor Ruggles stewed and dithered, his anxious eyes scanning the rough-edged characters who swarmed the streets now. The new posters came out with the wording, $2,000 reward offered for capture, dead or alive, of the killer of Lawrence Tucker. No mention was made of Smoke Jensen. Sheriff Jake Reno discovered more ways that being on the payroll of Benton Howe and Miguel Sayeres had its damn drawbacks. Those politicos who remained behind after the fiesta had been frightened almost witless by that second visit from Smoke Jensen. Just an hour ago, Benton Howe had summoned him to the office to demand that he put men on the ranch to keep the politicians there until an agreement could be reached on his White Mountain project. Reno hurried along now to round up men to guard the B-Bar H. He came up short as he met the cold, hard stare of one of a pair of gaunt and narrow-faced men with a look of gunfighters about them. Their square chins jutted high in arrogance, and the mean curl of their lips had to come from hours of practice before a mirror. The one with black leather gloves folded over his cartridge belt spoke, revealing yellowed, crooked teeth.
Sheriff, just a man we wanted to see. How are we supposed to find this feller done killed your Mr. Tucker if we don't know his name? Who is he? Or do you know?
Oh, I know, all right. The name is Smoke Jensen.
Not the Smoke Jensen.
It's the only Smoke Jensen I know.
The sneer disappeared from his face, and the gunhawk cut his eyes to his partner. They appeared to reach wordless agreement that concluded with a nod.
Do you happen to have any idea where he might be found?
Oh, yeah. He's hanging out in the Cibolas, last I heard.
Why ain't you got no posse out?
I already lost a dozen good men to that bastard. I don't reckon to reduce the whole population of Sakura to bring him out of there.
Now that was a lie. Smoke Jensen had killed only 3 of the posse. He'd wounded 6 or 7 more. Also, some 20 had quit altogether. What Sheriff Reno wouldn't admit was that he couldn't get anyone to go after Smoke Jensen. Not even Quint Stalker's men.
Being as we're from Texas, which way are these Cibolas?
Sheriff Reno waved his arm expansively.
All around here. To the east, to north, mostly to the west. That's where Smoke Jensen can be found. West of here. I'm certain of it.
Thank you kindly, Sheriff.
Together, the two men crossed the boardwalk and mounted their horses, while Sheriff Reno watched in silence. They touched reins to necks and pointed the animals south.
Hey!
Yeah?
West is that way, fellas.
We know it. Yeah!
Sheriff Jake Reno counted score and realized that that made a record of 22 for one day. And that left him with that many less to stand between himself and Smoke Jensen. Senator Claypool examined the certificate, authorizing him to draw on the Philadelphia Mint for the sum of $20,000 in gold bullion. Carefully, he folded it and placed it reverently in an inside coat pocket. He gave a beatific smile to Jeffrey Benton Howe and patted over the spot where he had deposited the draft.
You are a gentleman and a scholar, Sir Jeffrey. Likewise, a man of his word. Nice, anonymous gold has always appealed to me. It can be used anywhere.
Benton Howe pushed back his caster desk chair and lit a fat cigar. The rich aroma of Havana Corona Corona filled the study at the B-Bar H.
I dare say, if you fail to use your usual impeccable diplomatic skill in this, you might have need of somewhere else to spend that.
Ah, no. My colleagues and I shall invent some sort of reason why that land has to be separated from the reservation. Heaven forbid that we ever mention gold being found there. Too many others would want a piece of the pie and spoil your project altogether.
You understand only too well, Chester. Now then, I suggest a small tot of brandy to seal the bargain, and then I have others to see.
Certainly.
10 minutes later, Chester Claypool had departed, and the leather chair opposite Benton Howe was occupied by His Honor Judge Henry Thackeray of the Federal District Court of the Territory of Arizona. His Honor didn't seem the least bit pleased. A heavy scowl furrowed his high, shiny forehead.
You've handled this Smoke Jensen affair miserably, Jeffrey.
I will admit to having erred slightly in regard to the security of my ranch headquarters.
It's a great deal more than that, Jeffrey. If it ever comes out that your man, Quint Stalker, arranged the scene of the crime to indicate the guilt of Smoke Jensen, you may find yourself seeking the life of a grandee down in Mexico, or even South America, or worse still, standing on the gallows in Santa Fe. I certainly do not intend to be there beside you.
And you shall not be, my friend. Judge, everything is arranged as you asked. 7,500 in gold coin, mostly 50s and 20s. It is right there in my safe. A like amount to be paid whenever you are called upon to hear any challenge to our claim of the White Mountain Reservation land.
Judge Thackeray pondered a moment, pushing his thin lips in and out to aid his musing.
That's satisfactory. However, Jeffrey, I must caution you. Smoke Jensen has to be dealt with swiftly and finally, or the consequences will fall on you.
Jeff York and Walt Reardon rode into Saguaro with Smoke Jensen. They'd come for supplies for the Tucker Ranch. Martha's idea of hiding in plain sight seemed to have worked so far, and recently Smoke began chafing at the inactivity and expressed a willingness to test just how anonymous he had become. Walt halted the buckboard at the rear loading dock of the general store.
Smoke, Jeff and I are going to amble over and visit with Mort Plummer at the Hangdog while the order's filled.
Fine with me. I'll meet you there when it's loaded.
We'll be waiting, Kirby.
Jeff had wormed Smoke's given name out of him for just such events as this. From the pained expression on the face of the gunfighter, it was pretty obvious that Kirby was not his favorite handle. Walt untied his saddle horse from the tailgate of the wagon and stepped into a stirrup. Together, he and Jeff rode to the mouth of the alley and then turned left on the main street. Business was sparse in the saloon at this early hour. Only a handful of barflies lined the mahogany now, shaky hands grasping the first eye-opener of the day. Walt and Jeff ordered beers and settled at a table near the banked and cold potbelly stove. Two young wranglers came into the saloon. They turned to the bar at once. Jeff York had a good look at him. He grew visibly tense and sat quite still. When they had sipped off their first shots and chased him with beer, the tall, lanky blonde turned from the bar and peered into the shadowed corner that contained Jeff York and Walt Reardon. His face took on an expression of extreme distaste.
Well, be goddamn, Sully. It's that no-account ranger from back home.
You're seeing things, Jip.
We's in New Mexico now.
No, I'm right. Turn around and see for yourself.
Walt Reardon cut his eyes to Jeff York's muscle-tightened face. He knew this could get deadly in about a split second. He scooted back in his chair, came to his boots, and started for the rear.
Got to hit the outhouse, Jeff.
Walt cut his eyes toward the location of the general store. Jeff nodded.
Hey, Jip, you're right. That same law dog that locked us away in Yuma prison for 3 years. Like to have killed me, heaving all them big rocks onto the levee. Bit far from your stomping grounds, ain't you, Ranger?
You're making a mistake, Sullivan.
Nope, way I sees it, it's you've made a big mistake. There's two of us, and this time our backs ain't turned.
Jeff rose slowly, shaking his head.
I never could abide a liar, Sully. You two were facing me that day in Tombstone. Didn't either one of you clear leather before I had you cold? Did it then, I can do it now.
You've got older now. Slower, Sergeant York.
No, it's Captain now. And I'm not getting older. Just better.
Two more second-rate fast guns stepped through the bat wings and took in the action. The chubby one grinned.
Sully, Rip, you got some fun lined up?
That we have, Pete. Just funnin' with an old acquaintance from Arizona. Ain't that right, Ranger York?
Can we get a piece of him too, Sully?
Sorry, Lenny. When I get through, I don't reckon there'll be enough left to go around.
Mort Plummer, the bar owner, spoke up then, hoping to delay the inevitable. At least get the killing started out in the street and not in his bar.
You're forgetting the ranger here has a friend along.
Oh, he run out at the get-go. Plum Yella.
I don't think so. I sort of recognize him from a while back. Never asked him personal, understand? But I figure him to be Walt Reardon, the gunfighter from Montana.
No wonder he ran. I hear he lost his belly a long while ago.
Not so you'd notice.
Walt Reardon pushed his way between Pete and Lenny and crossed to Jeff. He was followed a second later by Smoke Jensen.
I'm gonna go get the rest.
Oh, God damn it! Everyone get out! The bar's closed!
I don't think so, barman. Pour me another shot and set up the boys, too, when they come.
Get out of my saloon!
You pushing for a bullet all your own, barkeep?
You got a nasty mouth. Too bad you don't have a brain to go with it.
Suddenly, the eyes of one of the morning tipplers at the bar lit up in recognition.
Holy shit! That's the guy from the lynch mob! That's Smoke Jensen!
That cleared out the regulars fast. The last one out collided with one of the five proddy outlaw trash entering the room.
Watch it! Excuse me. I think I heard my mama calling.
Lenny led the way as they entered. Mort Plummer had gone white with fear. The hard case quintet spread out and faced off against three coldly professional guns. 8-3. Pretty good odds, the way Sully figured it.
You newcomers have no part in this. Walk out now and no harm will come of it.
Sully's eyes never left Jeff.
You boys have a drink on me, then I'll open this dance.